From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska state government has more money flowing into it than it's had in years. High oil prices, permanent fund growth, and federal relief allowed Governor Mike Dunleavy to propose a budget that does not include large cuts or draw from savings. But as Alaska lawmakers begin their work on the budget, some are raising concerns about how sustainable the governor's plan is, and that could have big implications on the size of permanent fund dividends. KTOO's and Alaska Public Media's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Governor Dunleavy's budget depends on oil prices staying higher than they have in recent years. In his State of the State address, Dunleavy said the state shouldn't count on this continuing.
As Alaskans, we know the price of oil is volatile. In just the past 2 years, we've seen prices go from negative to nearly $90 per barrel. We know better than to take current prices for granted, and we must continue to hold the line on state spending without sacrificing core services, and that includes the PFD.
Dunleavy has proposed that the state change the PFD formula to pay dividends that are half of the annual draw. That's known as the 50-50 PFD. This year, that would be more than $2,500, a lot more than in recent years. Dunleavy's administration says the state can have balanced budgets in the long run and still pay the PFDs he's proposed. That PFD could also help legislators campaigning for re-election. But some legislative leaders are not rushing to embrace the plan. Representative Bryce Edgman says it's not realistic to pay large dividends and expect balanced budgets. He's a Dillingham independent who caucuses with the mostly Democratic House majority.
But I'm a little uncomfortable when I hear the statement that, oh, in a few years, the governor's 50-50 works out. Well, to me, that's not complete. There are so many other factors that we need to talk about before we can get to that statement.
The legislature has struggled to agree on changes to the dividend formula for 6 years. Edgman says this year's dividend will lead to political pressure for the future.
And that creates expectations that we need to grapple with in ensuing years, depending on whatever we do with the permanent fund dividend. And I want to point that out because that drives what happens in this building. And it has driven what's happened in this building for some time now.
One concern about setting dividends this year is that hundreds of millions of dollars in federal aid won't be around in the future. Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster says he wants to consider the effect on budgets beyond next year. He says the state shouldn't count on the federal relief to pay for services that would continue well beyond the next budget. He cites increases in public safety spending Dunleavy proposed.
So I think we're going to put a lot of emphasis on trying to balance the budget without those funds.
Another concern is that outside of the permanent fund, the state has less in savings than at any point in more than a decade. So legislators are considering saving for the future. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman says the extra money won't last forever and may not last beyond this year.
So we need to be careful that we don't get too euphoric at $80 a barrel and end up making our position worse in a couple years.
Stedman says the legislature must look beyond the next budget and the upcoming election. The legislature hasn't settled on a PFD amount until toward the end of the session in recent years. And with the various pressures on the state budget in the long term, that process may play out again this year. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Alaska Supreme Court has ruled against a group of young people who sued the state trying to change its approach to fossil fuel production. The lawsuit said the state's promotion of oil and gas extraction contributes to a climate crisis that threatens their way of life. In a 68-page decision on Friday, the justices upheld a lower court's dismissal of the case. They said natural resource policy is a political question for the legislature and state agencies to decide. The opinion says courts ensure that particular statutes and decisions comply with the Constitution. But the Constitution gives the legislature the power to set the proper balance between development and environmental protection. 16 young Alaskans brought the case called Sigunik versus State. They were represented by an attorney from Our Children's Trust, an Oregon-based nonprofit. This is the second climate change case brought by young Alaskans to be dismissed before trial. The first, Canuck versus State, was tossed out on similar grounds. The Environmental Protection Agency announced on Thursday that it intends to revise a proposed determination under the Clean Water Act that could permanently block development of the Pebble deposit upstream from Bristol Bay. But mine opponents are frustrated at the slow pace. Section 404C of the Clean Water Act allows the EPA to restrict the disposal of dredged or fill material in an area or deny it altogether. It's referred to as EPA's veto power over wetlands permits. EPA Region 10 Acting Administrator Michelle Prezada said in a letter to the Army Corps of Engineers and to the Chief Executive of Pebble Limited Partnership that while the EPA is revising its proposed determination, it still has reason to believe that the discharge of materials from the proposed mine could lead to, quote, unacceptable adverse effects on important fishery areas. But Alana Hurley, Executive Director of United Tribes of Bristol Bay, says this announcement is a disappointment because it delays permanent protections for the region.
Our tribes put in a petition literally 12 years ago in 2010, and instead of progressing to the next step, we are taking a step back.
Hurley is also disappointed that the Biden administration hasn't honored its commitment to consult with tribes during this process.
And we have actually been requesting tribal consultation since this fall about how this process should move forward and what that should look like in terms of public engagement and tribal consultation. And today's announcement was made without the type of consultation, which is contributes to our disappointment.
Pebble spokesman Mike Heatwall said in an email, quote, "We have received a letter from the EPA, and we are reviewing it to determine our next steps," end quote. The EPA originally proposed a preemptive veto in 2014 before Pebble applied for a permit. The Trump administration's EPA withdrew it in 2019. Then last September, the EPA announced that it would restart the proposed determination process, which could end with a veto of the mine permits. The EPA has issued vetoes just 13 times in the 50 years of the Clean Water Act, when a major project would have significant impacts on some of America's most ecologically valuable waters. The EPA says it will issue its revised determination by May 31st. The Alaska House of Representatives did not take action today on a proposal to punish Wasilla Republican Representative David Eastman for his membership in the Oath Keepers organization. Alaska Public Media and KTO's Andrew Kitchman, once again.
Last week, members of the largely Democratic House Majority Caucus were discussing whether Eastman violated a provision of the state constitution that prohibits anyone from holding office who belongs to a group that wants to overthrow the federal government. Eastman was listed as a, quote, life member of the Oath Keepers in a list an anonymous hacker purportedly took from the group's web servers. Eastman has maintained his connection with the Oath Keepers was slight, that he applied for membership more than a dozen years ago and never attended a meeting. The Oath Keepers leader, Stuart Rhodes, has been charged with seditious conspiracy for his actions related to the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Eastman was in Washington, D.C. that day. He was at the protest. But he said he didn't enter the Capitol. He has not been charged with any crimes related to the insurrection, and no evidence has emerged to link him to the riot. On Monday morning, a committee voted to recommend removing Eastman from all of his committee seats as a punishment for his involvement with the group. The full House of Representatives took up the issue later in the day, but House leaders held off on taking a floor vote after Eastman objected. He raised a concern that any action related to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics was legally required to be taken separately. The House tabled action on the motion to remove Eastman from committees. That means the action was postponed, but could be taken up again later. Eastman is in his third term in the House. In 2017, he became the first member of the chamber to be censured after he said that some women, including those who live in villages, are glad to become pregnant so they can receive Medicaid-funded travel to have abortions. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization is holding its tribal assembly virtually again. It's the third time the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska will hold the event online. It's scheduled for late April. Last year, the assembly was delayed until October in the hopes of COVID-19 case rates slowing down enough to meet in person, but it ended up going virtual. With the current wave of COVID-19 cases in Alaska due to the Omicron variant, the tribe's executive council decided that it was safer to meet online again. During the tribal assembly, delegates will vote for the tribe's president, officers in the tribe's executive council, tribal court judges, and an emerging leader. Delegates will also submit resolutions to the tribe that establish what the tribe's priorities are and the tribe's position on issues affecting tribal citizens. The tribe's efforts to build a tribal campus came from one of those resolutions last year. This year's resolutions are not in yet. In local COVID-19 news, Juneau officials say cases are slowly trending down, though a city official reports there was one COVID-related death over the weekend at Bartlett Regional Hospital, a man in his 80s. According to state data, there were 163 new COVID-19 cases reported among Juneau residents and visitors from Friday through Sunday. That's down about a third from this time last week. Local emergency officials say the case rate is still high enough to be concerning for Bartlett Regional Hospital's operations. Therapeutic treatments are still being rationed for people at the highest risk of developing severe cases, and 25 healthcare workers at the hospital are sick or quarantining. Three people with an active COVID-19 infection are being treated at the hospital. Within Juneau schools, at least 11 cases were reported among people who were infectious while in a school or during school activities today. Statewide from Friday through Sunday, 4,447 new cases were reported among state residents and visitors. 154 people who are positive for COVID-19 are hospitalized, including 8 people on ventilators. State data show 2 new deaths were preliminarily reported among Alaska residents for the week ending January 30th. Today also marks the last day of COVID testing at many airports in Alaska. Many other free options for lab tests or home tests remain available in the community. And finally, the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning. It takes effect at 3 p.m. Tuesday and expires at 3 a.m. Wednesday. 5 to 9 inches of snow are expected across a big swath of southeast Alaska, including Juneau. Light freezing rain may mix in Wednesday afternoon. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, January 31st, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.